LeBron Copeland. I know that they were talking about LeBron quite a bit, but there's a lot of stuff here after 8. I was there in 74.
Good evening, everyone.
Yeah, I didn't start until 77.
Yeah, it was 74 when I
This is the most extraordinary Millbrook and Cavan Historical Society meeting. And this is how we want them all to be from here on in. And in order to make them like this, we need your input. So please let us know what you would like to talk about for the next few months, and we will slot you in, because it is a real pleasure to see you all here. So thank you for coming. We are the Millbrook and Cavan Historical Society. We're trying to, at the urging of our younger board members, move ourselves out of the 19th century and into the 20th. And I think that speaks to you and to all of us. So I hope that this will be a really interesting and exciting evening where we can share some memories and record some memories. I am just the president. They made me do this. I have stuff that I want you to pay attention to. We have publications, but more importantly, we have membership forms up here. Those of you who would be interested in seeing us continue along this route and start to be more relevant to what you would like to talk about are invited to come up and join our group so that you have a voice and so that you can influence how we construct ourselves so that we can have more exciting evenings like we're about to have. So when Alex, who will be organizing this evening, tells you that you have free time, please come up to the front and help yourselves to membership forms. I will be up here should you wish to buy any of our publications or join our group. So thank you for coming. And with no further ado, I invite Alex to take over.
So I guess welcome to the unofficial Millbrook Correctional Center reunion for 2018. Honestly, we had no idea what to expect tonight. We kind of, I can't remember now, it was a long time ago, but we started coming up with different ideas. I'm new to the whole Historical Society thing. Obviously, it's been going on for a long time, and it's had kind of a very different theme in the past, which is really neat. But a lot of the stuff, I grew up in the area, and I'm interested in a lot of the more recent things. It's great to hear the stories from the early 40s, but a lot of these stories that I would hear kind of through the grapevine from back in the day when the jail was up at the top of the hill were fascinating, and I don't really know which ones were true, which weren't. And normally, these events are kind of structured around, we have one guest speaker and talk on something, which is great, you learn a lot about one topic, but what I wanted with this was more of an informal setting, a little more casual, although because so many people showed up, it kind of has tweaked things a bit, because what I was hoping was more of a pass the mic and share some stories, not necessarily directly about the jail, but the jail's impact on Millbrook. I've heard stories of all the inmates coming down and helping out with yard work for the older residents. Stories about people making custom license plates and prisoner breakouts and all sorts of wild stories. So I was hoping to try to get this event to kind of document some of those and get them kind of put into the record. Don't worry, I think the statute of limitations passed, nobody's getting in trouble. And one other question, too. Did we get anyone that served time in jail? I I was hoping we could get somebody that served time. There, I don't know if anyone has seen, there's pictures online of somebody who ended up breaking into the jail, which just sounds so strange, after it closed and taking pictures of an inmate that had served time there. So there's a lot of interesting stories just around that alone. So I'm not really sure where to start. I personally don't really know too much about the jail and back when it was built. Does anyone in the room have a little bit of a backstory on when it was built and the construction of it, when it went up? I mean, I know that's going way, way back. But. Okay, can we have...
I can hand this to you if you want,
or you're welcome.
I'm trying to keep it informal so there's no pressure. That's also why we have the bar
tonight, too. And the other thing, I was going to do some stories for a bit, and then I've noticed that everybody is seeing people on the other sides of the room that they haven't seen in a long time. So I want to break it halfway so that people can have 15, 20 minutes to mingle again. Maybe loosen up, get more cheers. What better stories for the second half? So that's kind of the theme I want, so we'll lay up right here. So I can, if you just want to, if you have a strong voice, you can just stand up and tell a story. Okay, we'll do the mic then. So I'll be the mic runner. We'll just see how it goes. I've got lots of other subject ideas that we can jump around to, or we can just kind of let it naturally flow.
Just stay seated.
Oh, yeah, please. No, please stay seated. I'll run the mic.
My name is Gary Snellgrove, and I was raised in Millbrook, and I worked 2 years at Millbrook Boxes.
Gary, put the mic to your mouth.
More up there?
Thank you.
My name is Gary Snellgrove, and I started up here in 1966. And I worked here 2 years. First year is probationary year. The second year, I, with another corporal, started a recreation program for the inmates. The baseball, horseshoes, handball, all that stuff, all within the wall, right? And I was here for 2 years and I got promoted and went to the girls' training school as recreation director in Lindsay, okay? Anyway, I remember when the institution was actually built, we never went up there, but I think Carol was telling me they did tours through that institution prior to its opening. And one of the things the reason that this thing came here was John Foote. And John Foote was the MPP, and he was actually won the Victoria Cross. And he was the one instrumental in getting the institution put here. I started in 66, it actually opened, I think, about 56 or 57, wasn't it? Yeah, 57. There's been a lot of change, obviously, through the years. Okay, 54, I wasn't sure. Yeah, started in 54, and they finished, opened in 54. Okay. Yeah. Carol actually was telling me tonight that she got locked in one of the cells up there on the tours. Another thing, I don't know how much everybody here knows or doesn't know about the institution, but it was originally the Department of Reform Institutions, and then it changed to Department of Corrections, and then it went Ministry of Correctional Services, right? How much are you interested in knowing what the layout of the institution was? Anybody interested in that? You probably all saw the big wall around it. Was now taken down a couple of years ago. But when it was up, outside the front, very front, which is the part that faced to the south, was the superintendent's office. The records clerks, the office managers, and so on were in that area. Then there was a sally port on the left side of that in the front part that you went through double doors, double steel doors, and there was a guard there that let you in, and you could go down the main corridor to the north. That the guard that was on the front as well supervised the inmate visiting. And they were not allowed to physically touch. They were all separated by glass with telephones. And he could listen. This wouldn't be the way it is today, but he could listen in to everything that was said. Then you went down the long corridor to the back, and on the left side was the reception area for inmates. The right side were officers' offices, and then there was a staff room. And then you went through the main grills at the main control room, and to the left was where the inmates were kept. There was two floors, the low end, based on the way the inmates were classified. All of the bottom floor was basically what they call group ones. Maybe things changed in later times, but that's the way when I was there. And all of the lower floor, and there was six, I think, cell blocks on the lower level. And the group ones, which were the hardened criminals and the tough guys and all that, were in the lower cells. Each cell block on the right-hand side, the correctional officer could go in a little bit into the cell block, and he controlled all of the doors. Each door, each inmate had his own cell, and it could either open one door, one side, or the whole, all of the doors in that particular cell block. So there was the upstairs were different ones, and they kept the inmates segregated because of their classification. Like pedophiles and other things like that were kept in one wing. Another wing was arsonists. Another wing was the heavy drug addicts. And they were all segregated again by cell block. When you came back downstairs and you went to the east, there was workshops, a tailor shop, which the inmates worked in, and they made the inmate clothing for Nova Correctional Center, as well as a lot of the other institutions in the province. And further down was what they called the license plates or the markers that the inmates made the license plates similar to what you see today. And they were actually put in a blank and then pressed them down and punched out the numbers. I imagine it's all done computerized now. Anyway, on the right side, when you came down that hall, was there was a boot shop where tailors, where they prepared officers' boots and inmate shoes, boots, whatever. And then the next one, there was a dry cleaning one there, I think. Yeah, laundry, that's right. And then the jogging shop, yeah, where they did a lot of the repairs, right? That's right, for the provincial parks. For the provincial parks, that's right. And then when you went beyond that was where the stores were that kept all the license plates, which Ken Cross managed that area and shipped them out through the province. There was a wing that was not a hospital wing, but just a medical wing that the inmates could come. If they were sick, they were allowed to come once a day to the medical parade. And I have a little story to tell you about that. I was thinking about it. John Moclair was the head nurse, and he was quite a character. He actually ended up being the superintendent of Gulf Correctional Center later on in his life. But the inmates, when they came on these parades, were always trying to con John out of some kind of hallucinogenic drug that they could get anything to get high, right? So one day I brought inmates down, and John called me into his office and said, "Have a look at this." And then he held up a little pill that was blue and white. And he took it apart, took the stuff in the sink, put it back together, took his pen and put three dots on it. So then this one inmate came in and had always been bugging John, and he said, "Look, I'd get in trouble if I give you this pill, a special pill I got." And he said, "If you promise me you'll go back to your bunk and take it after you get in bed." He said, "I'll give it." So away the guy goes with this pill. And I happened to see him the next day in the corridor, and I said, "How'd that pill work?" "It's the best one I ever had." He said, "Oh, no."
There he is.
Amen. There was also something that Carol reminded me of. There was an outside camp as well. And I think it was alluded to a little bit there, where inmates that had short sentences, like were picked up for drug or not drinking or anything like that, they were kept outside, and there was no security out there, and other than no walls like there was inside. And they did the maintenance of the grounds and all other things, as well as for a while, they used to come down and help people in Millbrook, the seniors especially, shovel their grab rocks, the driveways, want to cut the grass, whatever. There was complaints about it, so they got put in that stuff. You're stealing jobs from other people and all this stuff. I don't know. Well, I was going to tell you another story that happened to me, and only me. My father had the BA grudge at the West End where the Christian Assembly Church was down, and he sold cars and had some of the first school buses in Melbourne. And that's just part of the story. So I wanted to know about where Dad's grudge was. So anyway, a friend of mine and I were driving around having a beer after dark one night, and we were driving down the false line, and his car started acting up. So going out, his car started acting up.
So right on the president's way came up. Hey, Jerry.
On the fall
good to see you.
And I said, well, leave the car here. We'll just cut down by the institution and go grab a dad's badge and get a car from there. So that sounds fine.
Who's
we're
that?
Heading across the field. Oh, it's so good. Oh, and St. Dark's and us. We run like hell, right? It was the only way you may ever escape from something.
Good for you. You've been there for a while now, eh? Oh my God, Louis.
But that's not the only story. House that I we got a car, we're driving around the Millbrook, and I see and he's walking along the street up towards the Sunday Church, and he's got the inmate by the arm. He loaded him in the car and took him up to the jail. Only in Melbourne. I've got one final story. With the inmates working at the marker plant, making license plates, sometimes they would get short of plates. The problem is whether they make the inmates, they would make staff work overtime in the evening. And there was some correctional officers, there was some civilians were working there. Anyway, and the story was, Bill, one civilian guy was a huge man and waited around. I don't know what he was doing. But his, I remember quite a bit, it's different than that, I don't know. But his belt size was 54. That's a big one. Anyway. I was working in an institution, and some of the I was assigned to the institution down to the marker. And I said to all the other guys, there was three guys from Lindsay, there was Rob Johnson, and this other big guy, and they lived in Lindsay. And I said, where's Bill? Oh, he's at home, he's got a couple of black eyes. I said, what happened to him? He said, we were working at the markers the other night. We were heading up to the Highway 7 to go over to Omini, and we always stopped and have a beer. So we said, we're hiding, heading down Highway 7. And all of a sudden, this big car comes running up and hands with high beams. So we and he says, we pulled into the Legion, and this car pulls in behind us. He said, go under the car and back, and kick the headlights right under the car. Guess what? Tipper Tilly Watson stuck under the car, and he goes, Nelson, he's over!
get to know if it works great. Not this time, I don't think, but the next time I go, I can feel the bandage now. I don't know whether he goes down there or he goes down before
generation crisis.
If I see him, there's a lot of younger people in this place.
Something I've got here, my daughter sent me, is a picture of the original staff of Never Correctional Centers. And we've got some of the names, but I can't remember, I don't know them all. And maybe I was thinking tonight, some of them here might remember some. Carol has the picture here and the list, if anybody can kind of look at it, I appreciate it. Joy is also with all the names.
It was all a blur.
She had to see Ben and that.
That's not bad. I think it was smart.
Warren Charles, Cliff Charles, Keith Martin, Charlie Farr, Kim Drury, Reg Duffy, Keith Blair, Alan Earl, Mike Curtis, Superintendent Hardy Patterson, and John Foote, the MPP. And one of the cooks was Russ Cummings. Anyway, I hope a couple s'mores. That would have been a 19, whatever this is.
He's got a sad news kid, isn't he?
So it was probably similar. When I was manager at Reno, we had 200 inmates and about 200 students. We had a farm and all that. I only worked in Millbrook just barely over a year, and then I got promoted and went to Lincoln. So I don't know how many. I don't know how many years. Maybe some of the others could call them.
Thanks for that. I think you brought a pretty good idea. One part of that story caught my attention right off the one inmate that escaped. Does anyone have any more details about that story? Anyone remember that? Or?
And one of the inmates, there's two of them, I think, and one of the inmates fell before he got over the wall and broke his leg, so he had a broken leg inside, and the other guy got out, and it was the guy who had a broken leg who could hotwire and steal a car. And he's still lying inside the wall, and the other guy just sort of ended up wandering around a little more aimlessly from what I heard. But there was another inmate that got out of there after, whether it was the inside or during camp, but I remember, I think, going to be LCP, and he was working that night. I was off duty. I was living up with the United Church, and all the guards brought their wives to my house to sort of keep them safe while they were searching the streets for the inmate who was loose, and we had a hell of a party. And the guy who was caught, he was hiding up a tree over by Kenny Motors, and they were sort of hanging around thinking, where is the guy be? And he's up the tree. And then got him down, and that was as far as he got. And I I picked him up the next morning to take him into, they just took him to the reception and held him in reception cells, and I was taking him to court the next day. And I said, you had a knife in there. He said, yeah, I did. I said, where is it? He said, I hid it in the storm sewer in front of your house where you were having the party. So I stopped the car in my driveway and got out, and sure enough, there was his knife in my culvert in front of the house. And he decided he wasn't maybe going to have a knife, and he got loose. But he took off from Durham Camp on the outside. A little bit more about Durham Camp, how the inmates used to come down and help people out down here. They would also help themselves a little bit. In a particular scenario, we'll get into the scenario of it all, but the inmates started seeking out one particular one, come down, and they broke into the LCBO and got a bunch of booze and got it back in Durham Camp. This is where, when there were actual inmates that were down to what we would call short time, and they only like had 30 days, and they had a good track record, and they would be in there and just sort of getting ready to go up to the outside, more or less.
That's enough.
So then they broke into Dr. Jared Van Loon's office, got drugs and stuff, whatever, there. And then somebody mentioned to me, they said, you know, I think I saw one of those guys wearing those prison coats, those gray ones. They were called JoJo. He says, I could have swore I saw a guy out behind Calhoun's one night and just step into the dark with that. I went up and researched all the which inmates were in there at that time and the scenarios and what guard was on duty with all the nights that break-ins occurred in town. And as a result, I charged 18 inmates, and they were all convicted of that. And that thing ended a lot of the Durham situation. My name is Joe Dorica. I went to work in Millbrook Correctional Center in 1972. I think I was 22 years old. Gordy Van Dam started shortly thereafter. And in 1974, I was transferred from the top of the hill to the bottom of the hill. I went from Millbrook Correctional Center to Millbrook OPP. And then I spent the next 10 years of my life going back inside the prison because of my knowledge of the inside working of the joint. I got to go back in there and investigate several of the more serious occurrences that took place in there. And so it was about 83, I think, when I was but there was a lot of the scenarios and the things that happened inside. There was a lot of fun times, a lot of great guys to work with, but it was a tough time.
Oh,
a lot of times when husbands and boyfriends and that went to work for their 8 hours, and often it was longer than that, and you got held over something with the ship. It was a tough 8 hours, you know, when you're dealing with 26 inmates, and that's how many inmates were in each cell or each wing. And come shower time, you had to shower 26 inmates. You basically opened 6 doors at a time, 6 inmates out, got in the showers, and they drag their, you know, any amount of time they could, they get longer, and you have to get them out of the showers and get them locked up and get another 6 out, and then they would drag their feet. And it was just a constant barrage of conflict. And at the end of the day, it was a tough 8 hours, and it held the toughest inmates in the system. As Jim was alluding to, there was 5 different groups of inmates. The group ones, the behavioral problems. The group twos, the sexual predators and deviants. The group threes were the heavy drug traffickers. Group fours were protective custody. Then there was arsonists, and then there was the escapees that could get out of any joint in the province. So they all came to Millbrook. So you had like anywhere between 175 and 200 of the worst inmates that you could imagine, all stuck in one place. Sure, they were only doing 2 years less a day, but a lot of them had done major prison time before. But what they got convicted of at that particular time only got them a provincial sentence. And often what they would do, a seasoned prisoner, if he didn't want to do his 2 years less a day, the first thing he would do was punch a guard in the face and get extra time and give him a federal sentence, and then he'd be shipped off to a federal penitentiary instead of the correctional center. Wasn't good if you were the guard who got the hit in the nose. And I've been the recipient of a few of them, and it was not fun. And so it was a tough place to go to work. It wasn't all fun and games. When you did your time up there, it was a long shift sometimes, And we were up there for riots inside and outside, and when a lot of tear gas was used and a lot of violence, and there were scary times for young people working. It was the maximum security for the province of Ontario. Yeah. When you talked about Marketplace, the last time I was in Millbrook, I was an OPP helping run a conference on street gangs. And I brought up a sergeant from a Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. He was in charge of all the gang units for Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, which is at any time 40,000 inmates. And I asked him what he wanted to see in Canada, and he says, I want to see some of your jails. And I said, you know, I could take you to see a tower or something. No, I wanted to see a jail, so I took him to Millbrook. But I had arranged for his name to be stamped out in a license plate. So at the end of the tour, and this guy was involved in the movie industry in Los Angeles, and he was looking at Millbrook, you know, what a great spot for a movie set, because it was closing. And as we finished up in the Marker plant, and he saw his beautiful license plate, Belmont, his name was this. And the very next day, as he began the speech, was when the jets hit the end. And so that was the, and he was talking at that time. And he lived with me for a week because he couldn't fly back out again. But when he left and I got him on the plane, he had his Belmont license plate from over.
I heard one little detail of that, the story where the prisoner was caught outside of Tinney's. I'm just wondering if you can confirm it was true, because it was through the group. That at one point, the local detachment ended up deputizing the volunteer fire department to help find, but the volunteer fire department was in town and ended up getting involved in finding the escaped inmate. Yeah. Okay, we'll get some details on that one later. I know Dr. Van Loan is itching to tell some stories about looking after the inmates for over the years, so I'll pass it over to you there, Doug.
Hi. I actually came in 1972 as well. I was seconded by the superintendent, because he said that he told me that he didn't escape, he hired this guy as an agent supervision. He said he hired too. So, lots of stories. I'll try to be quick with three things. Who were these people that were housed up there? Were these manipulative, dangerous guys? Were they the sons of wonderful mothers who had just messed up? And to an extent of that, two quick anecdotes to say that maybe they were all of those things. They were manipulative, and of course the place they wanted to be most manipulative was on sick parade. They called them sick parades because that was the military model. They didn't call them clinics or that sort of thing. There was military decorum. Otherwise, you would never have survived. So, one chap who was a little off, we were trying to figure out why. We were very careful administering his medications. He got very small doses. After he was told to swallow his medication, he had to drink a glass of water, and then his mouth was inspected. That was just the standard way we did things. Nonetheless, he suspected he was still a bit hot. And what we discovered was that before he would come in to take his medication, at that time dental care was not what it was subsequently, he had a very large cavity in one tooth. He filled that with gauze,
he would keep that medication buff long enough that it would impregnate the gauze. He would then go back to his cell and squeeze that little bit out. He would do that over many, many, many days and get enough so that he could take one bolus dose and get a high. So these guys were clever. Had another fellow who was similarly a bit high. Seemed like a very nice fellow. In fact, he was a bit of an artist. And on subsequent inspection of his cell, I determined that, in fact, he was quite a good artist. He had these lovely acrylic paintings. So my suggestion to the management was that he should be switched from acrylics to watercolors, and that solved that problem. So they were manipulative and difficult. Now, what was their perception of himself? I do remember admitting a young man to a hospital and caring for him there. The relationship changed a little when you went into the hospital. They became more of just a regular patient. So in talking with him, I asked him, you know, why he was in, you know. Well, he'd stolen a truck and ripped off a truckload of TVs or whatever it was from a warehouse or something. And I said, Jesus, I just don't understand. Excuse me. I said, holy cow. I beg your pardon. I said, you know, I don't understand this. I said, you know, if I was doing this job, I said, first of all, I would never steal a truck. You're theoretically being searched for before you've even done the ripoff job. I mean, that is bad, you know. You need to rent a truck. And what you do a few days before, you rent a similar size truck from a different company, and you have a, you know, you run it through. You see, will it fit down the streets? You know, you back it up, all of this stuff. I went through how you do this properly. This lad looked at me absolutely incredulously. He looked at me incredulously and he said to me, who do you think I am? He said, that's what the mafia do. So you see, he had a self-perception. He was just making a living. All he's just doing, you know, ripping off a few TVs, stealing a truck, just getting through life. But it told me something. It told me something about who they were. My final quick anecdote about the upside of these manipulative, difficult, challenging guys. So our daughter, Claire and our daughter was, as so many young people do, they took a job planting trees in the summertime when they're at university. So she got assigned to a camp way up in northern Ontario. She got in there and she found that she was the only girl with about 36 guys in this camp. It would never happen now, but that was, for some reason, that's what happened. So she's sitting, about the second day she's in this camp, she's sitting over at a table having lunch by herself, and these two rough-looking tattooed guys came up, sat themselves down in front of her, and they looked at her and they said, is your name Van Loan? And she said, well, it is. They said, is your dad a doctor? And she said, well, he is. And they said, we know him. They said, he was tough, but he was fair. And they said, if anybody in this camp ever gives you any trouble whatsoever, you let us know, and we will look after it. And they got up and walked away and never said another word to her that summer. So, these guys were buried.
All right, why don't we all break? I think you guys all want to mingle and chat some more. Grab a drink if you want, and we'll come back in about 10 minutes. How's that sound?